we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
And good Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Fred Jackson sitting in for Walker today here at the Core. And okay, hands up. Who watched the speech last night, the big speech? A few of you. Talked to some folks around the hallway this morning. Yeah, I saw the highlights this morning, et cetera, et cetera. Now, time for full confession. I do not always watch the State of the Union. Now, I know last night was not an official State of the Union address. It was an address described as a joint session of Congress. However, it had all the characteristics, let's put it that way, of a State of the Union address. I'm a guy who goes to bed early, but I really felt it necessary to watch that speech last night because of the lead up to it, that it was going to be an interesting speech, and Democrat reaction to it. And I wasn't disappointed. I stayed up for the whole thing. By the way, Trump is always setting records. He set a record last night for the length of a speech of that nature, an hour and 40 minutes. So it broke a Bill Clinton record, they say. But he had much to say, and it was an interesting night. As I say, what made it interesting, even more interesting than usual, was the response from the Democratic Party. Now, you may have heard, there were some in the Democratic Party that said they were going to boycott the speech. Shocking news, headline news, the Democrats do not like Donald Trump. So some said they were going to boycott. And then Hakeem Jeffries, who is the minority House leader, said, no, we better show up because the American people need to see, at least see some warm bodies in the seat, that there is an official opposition to the Republicans. They did show up. My assessment that from what I saw last night and what was demonstrated by the Democratic Party representatives in those seats, they have become the party of the pathetic. That is the only way to describe them, because it was pathetic. Now, the fact that they might not like some of the things that Donald Trump said, that's okay. You don't have to stand and applaud everything the opposing president was going to say. But there were moments. There were moments when the Democrats should have stood and should have applauded. We're going to be talking about that. I'm going to play you some excerpts from the speech last night. There were moments when, for instance, President Trump introduced a young man who was diagnosed with cancer several years ago, told he was only going to survive 5 months, but this was 5 years ago. He was still there. 13-year-old young man, and he actually, I think, became one of the stars of the show last night. DJ Daniel is his name. Diagnosed with cancer. The president has been made aware of him. He was made an honorary member of a police force. And then, to everybody's surprise, the president announced that he was making DJ an honorary member of the Secret Service. And the head of the Secret Service, young DJ, was sitting up in the balcony with some of the other Trump guests. And the head of the Secret Service walks in and presents young DJ with a badge of sort, Secret Service. And his DJ's dad was holding young DJ up. And when DJ got that badge and the head of the Secret Service was standing next to him, DJ leans over and gives the head of the Secret Service a big hug. Now, I'm sorry, folks. You ought to set aside your political beliefs at that moment. But the Democrats could not even applaud or stand for that. And that's why I say they really have become the party of the pathetic. Their agenda was not to have any praise at all. That moment wasn't about Donald Trump. It was about DJ and fighting a battle of cancer in his life and being honored. And there were several other incidents, and we'll talk about that. But I thought, here's the problem with the Democratic Party right now. They don't have a constituency. They are opposing or are advocating for everything that the American people voted against. And they're standing by that. There were other guests last night of President Trump. Young ladies who have, one young lady in particular, Peyton McNabb, who was injured by a transgender, a man playing in her sport. She was there. They couldn't applaud her, the fact. And of course, they are pro-transgender, the Democratic Party, so they didn't do anything then. They are pro-illegal immigration. So when the mom of Lakin Riley, the young nursing student who was murdered by an illegal alien, when she was recognized by President Trump last night, again, no applause, no kind of emotional connection with her, having lost a daughter in a horrible crime. Another mom who was there, the mom of a 12-year-old girl who was brutally sexually assaulted and murdered by two illegal aliens. She was recognized last night. No reaction from the Democrats. The only time they were vocal, and there was one in particular vocal last night, Democrat, Congressman Al Green of Texas. He got up and started to shout down the president. I've never seen anything like it. I've heard of a word mentioned from Republicans when there's been a Democrat president up there. But he kept shouting and shouting and shouting, trying to drown out President Trump as he opened his speech. And finally, House Speaker Johnson had to do something. I want to play you a little bit of what that sounded like. Cut number one.
Take your seat. Find it that members continue to engage in willful and concerted disruption of proper decorum. The chair now directs the sergeant at arms to restore order. Remove this gentleman from the chamber.
And Congressman Green was escorted out. Now that scene, folks, will be remembered. And then the other Democrats sitting there, they had ping pong paddles or something of that nature with false written on it. And they would, wave those things in the air. I mean, they really looked silly. But that's where the Democratic Party is. And I mean, they're not some little party. They are the second biggest party in the country right now. And there was a poll, and is it any wonder, that came out after the speech last night, a CBS poll. So not a Fox poll, a CBS poll. Views on Trump's speech among speech watchers. 76% approved, 23% disapproved. Time Trump spent on issues you care about. 63% said a lot. In other words, he dealt with a lot of the issues they care a lot about. 28% a little, 9% none at all. Speech made you feel among speech watchers. 68% said hopeful. 54% said proud. 27% worried. So that's where the Democratic Party is. And I was just watching Caroline Leavitt is giving her briefing, her daily briefing. She's the White House spokesperson. Extremely bright young lady. And in her monologue that she opened up with today, she named, and this is the media, the mainstream media, how they dissed the president's speech. So that will tell you the mainstream media, as this CBS poll indicates, mainstream media, totally out of touch with where the American people are with these important issues like border security, like the economy, like what's happening with Ukraine, all of those issues that were touched on last night. But you know, President Trump, he's not naive. And he addressed that pretty quickly last night, too. He said, no matter what I do, the Democrats are not going to be with me. Cut number two.
And once again, I look at the Democrats in front of me, and I realize there is absolutely nothing I can say to make them happy or to make them stand or smile or applaud. Nothing I can do. I could find a cure to the most devastating disease, a disease that would wipe out entire nations, or announce the answers to the greatest economy in history, or the stoppage of crime to the lowest levels ever recorded. And these people sitting right here will not clap, will not stand, and certainly will not cheer for these astronomical achievements. They won't do it, no matter what. Five times I've been up here. It's very sad, and it just shouldn't be this way.
Yeah, it shouldn't be this way. You know, there should be a celebration that's going on and where we are as a country right now. Does it have its problems? Sure it does. But there should be a celebration of what is going on. We're going to play a little bit more a little bit later in the program from the speech last night, but it was interesting. Trump had some major announcements to make. It wasn't just a review of what he has done. He talked about getting a letter from Volodymyr Zelensky just yesterday afternoon, prior to this speech. You remember that big dust-up in the Oval Office there, four or five days ago? When Zelensky made a fool of himself in the Oval Office. And Trump asked him to leave because he started berating the President of the United States in the Oval Office. And so But Zelensky apparently wrote a letter to President Trump yesterday saying, hey, you know, I want an end to this war. I regret what happened last Friday. And now I want to sign that mineral deal. So Trump played hardball. But once again, that paid off for him. What you may not have heard, and there was a small kind of reference to this last night. Remember, President Trump has talked about the Panama Canal. And he has been upset that, you know, the Panama Canal basically was given away by Jimmy Carter after Americans built that thing. And there's been great concern of China controlling that canal. Well, the president last night made mention that the fact that a company, BlackRock, that has a lot of American investors, has just bought out the ports at either end of the Panama Canal, bought from a Hong Kong organization that was running this. So now you have quasi-American control now of entry at both ends of the Panama Canal. So those were just a couple of the other things that all Americans should be celebrating. But yet, the Democrats sat on their hands and waved their little ping pong pads. And that's the memory. That's the image that you have from that speech last night and the Democrats and also the mainstream media. All right. We got to take a little break here. We're coming back and we're going to talk about the culture warrior, Dr. Don Weilman, our founder here. We'll be right back after the break.
Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Our world is changing quickly and dramatically, but we don't have to fret. Jesus, as he concluded the Sermon on the Mount, already told us how to prepare ourselves. Submitting ourselves to his word with regularity and consistency is one part of the preparation strategy. The other part is doing what he said. The coming rain, floods, and wind are inevitable. He didn't say if they come, he said when they come. Having Christ's word but failing to obey him qualifies one for the Hall of Fools.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
In the darkest corners of the world, hunger, abuse, lack of clean water, and shelter are everyday realities. Tomorrow Clubs is a ministry motivated by the Great Commission to bring God's love and the hope of the gospel to these forsaken places. Here's an update from a team leader.
One of the greatest impacts Tomorrow Clubs have had is in raising a whole generation of Christ followers. More than 500,000 children have learned to follow Jesus in their Tomorrow Club, and tens of thousands have gone on to become leaders in their churches and communities. A great many of the leaders serving in Tomorrow Clubs today came to faith in a Tomorrow Club, and this new generation of Christ followers has brought revival to dying churches and transformation to communities.
Tomorrow Clubs provide Christ-centered discipleship for children and teens in underserved countries. To learn more about how you can partner with Tomorrow Clubs to reach the world for Christ, visit tomorrowclubs.org. That's tomorrowclubs.org. All gifts are tax deductible.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness. And may he give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
And indeed, welcome back once again to this Wednesday edition of At the Core. Fred Jackson sitting in for Walker today. Well, it was a little over 25 years ago when I first met our founder here at American Family Association, Dr. Don Wildman. I was working in Canada. I come down just to have a look at Christian radio, and passed Don Wildman in the hallway. Hi, that was about it. And that was my first impression. Man, a few words. But then I was about to leave, go get a hamburger and fly back to Canada. Man, a few words, come into my office before you leave. I'm a complete stranger. And I come in, you want to come work for us? Work of the news? And, at that moment I had a piece. I said, yes, sir. All right. I said, got to get a green card first. I want to be legal, Don. And, he said, go get a green card. Let me know when you got it. Give me a call.
I love that.
And that's the way it was. That was my first exposure to our founder. Man of few words, but a man of great action, a man of determination. And that is why we're talking about a film that American Family Association has created called Culture Warrior. And with me in studio right now is a man who has known Brother Don, as we always called him around here, a man who has known him much longer than I have. Buddy Smith, Vice President Emeritus and board member here at American Family Association. Buddy, good to have you with
us. Thanks, Fred. Good afternoon.
Yeah. Buddy, you have told the story a number of times, and you're featured in this film of your first exposure to Don Wildman. Kind of the same way, wasn't it? You know, kind
yeah.
of just no big, I need to see your resume.
No.
It's just,
right.
This is the way Brother Don worked.
It was. Brother Don was, as you pointed out, he really had some great discernment, I think, God had given him about certain things, and he was very decisive.
Mm.
And most of the time, he proved to be right on target.
Oh, yeah.
And just as in the selection, obviously, for you to be here, because look at the great fruit that's come from your ministry here through the years. Mm-hmm. And so he just had that, you know, it's interesting. Don would, he was always careful about, at least my observation was, he was careful about, you know, well, God told me, or the Lord led me. He was very careful about putting himself forth as some kind of special prophet of some kind, I think. He didn't, mm-hmm. you know, so he would not use that language, but for those of us who worked closely with him and observed his life
uh-huh.
and how he lived it and how he carried out the ministry of AFA, God's hand was greatly upon him.
Yeah. This is a terrific movie, folks.
It is.
It tells his story.
It's gripping.
From the very beginning.
Yes.
His disgust with one night what he saw on TV.
That's right.
And that's how it all began.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for us to note, he saw something that he felt was wrong.
Yeah.
And a danger to families.
That's right.
And he didn't just complain about it.
Mm-mm.
It was about, let's do something about it. And
yes.
And that basically is the theme
that's
of
the
Don Wildman.
That is. Yeah. That is.
Talk about some of his battles.
Yeah, these battles, I tell you what, there were some giants that Brother Don faced out there, especially in corporate America. The film points out that, you know, initially he thought that he might be able to persuade the Hollywood producers, and found out pretty quickly that that was a rather arrogant tribe of people. Very difficult to have any kind of logical discussion with them. And so therefore, you know, he had to move to corporate America, looking at those that were paying for these programs, the sponsors. And so, again, I think Don's thought was that surely if he could get to some of these CEOs or maybe a corporate boardroom, to Don has, you know, we all know his research was very thorough. He had all the facts. He knew he could present to them, you know, and if they would just look at the research and listen to what those who were really knowledgeable about the effects of some of these programs that were having already on American families, that they would take note of that and want to do the right thing. But sadly, that was not the case.
No.
Again, met a very arrogant group of people that just weren't open at all to looking at his research, much less considering it. So again, you know, he was not willing to just bemoan the situation. Don was a person of action, and he wanted to make a difference, and he felt like God had called him to make a difference. And so he entered the arena and took on some big companies and corporations mm-hmm. in our nation, and had some early successes. You know, Sears, the movie does a really good job of pointing out some of these early battles, and they were not easy, but there were some results. You know, sometimes I remember in some of these battles, these battle fronts, these wars that we were in, the culture war, you know, it was not always, you couldn't really bank on what they said. they just weren't always truthful yeah. about the situation. Mm-hmm. But Don was one that, and it didn't really matter so much what they said. It mattered what they were doing.
Yeah.
And so we were careful to monitor what they were doing. And when we would try to raise the issue, many times success would come just for the fact that they were bothered by us. They would mention AFA, uh-huh. you know.
Uh-huh.
And so to Don, that was a signal that, okay, they're feeling it. Uh-huh. They at least the pressure is there for them to take a second look
yeah.
at what they're doing. And yeah. hopefully and prayerfully, you know, they might pull back and do the right thing. Of course, it kind of all started with Sears, you know,
uh-huh.
a huge company in America that, you know, they were one of the major sponsors. He had added up, he'd done his little monitoring sitting by his chair, and Sears came up to be an offender. Yeah. They were sponsoring a lot of toxic trash on television.
Wow.
And he tried to get to the front door and basically couldn't do it until, you know, he began to ask people to join him in not buying the products and letting Sears know why
yeah.
they're not buying the products. And then all of a sudden it's like, Reverend Wildman, you know, we'd like for you to come and let's talk about this. And of course that story unfolds, and it ended up with some good result.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're talking about the AFA produced a brand new film called Culture Warrior, and you can go watch it for free, culturewarrior.movie, culturewarrior.movie. And if you want to buy the disc itself, you can mm-hmm. go to our store
yeah.
and purchase it there. You know, the term, buddy, I was talking to MD Perkins, the producer mm-hmm. of the film a little earlier today, and the term culture warrior
yeah.
has become a negative in our culture.
Yes, it has.
As if being a culture warrior is something that is impeding progress.
Yeah.
And even amongst some evangelicals, mm-hmm. The term culture warrior has become, we shouldn't yeah. be doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the thing. If Jesus was alive today, he would be a culture warrior.
For sure.
He would be a culture warrior.
Yeah.
Because that's part of being salt and light.
It is.
And Don personified that.
Yes, indeed. You know, many Christians and churches today, Ash Wednesday, are beginning focus on Lent, 40 days leading up to Easter, in a preparation for that. And what comes to my mind, Red, you're exactly right. If the Lord himself were present here, we know he is,
yeah.
not in the flesh,
mm-hmm.
but through his church, through his people, through the body of Christ he is. But if he were here, the same thing would happen. It may not be a Roman cross. We don't have that means of execution any longer. But he would be on a cross.
Uh-huh.
And why was he on the cross? Well, he came to save mankind, and he didn't come to win a popularity contest. And he came with God's truth, and he came into a culture that was very against that message. And so, you know, would Jesus acquiesce and say, well, let's just love and get along, kind of like some mm-hmm. even churches claim yep. to do today? I think not. As I read the scripture, we've been studying recently some of the Pauline epistles, and, you know, when you understand the culture of the first century church, I mean, there were different idols in that day, but those early believers, they were up against it.
Yeah.
And to the point that they were martyred for what they believed.
That's right.
So who are we to think somehow that, you know, we're just going to go out there as believers and be popular and win people to Christ and transform our culture? Fred, it's just not going to happen that way.
No.
No, it's not. So we're called to be faithful followers of Christ. And sometimes that's just tough love. We stand for the Lord and for God's truth, and sometimes that's not the easy road.
No. No, and often we play saying, Brother Don, he was at an audience somewhere, and you may have been there that day, when he talked about it's all about being faithful.
Yes.
And that's so important today. I think a lot of Christians get discouraged.
That's true. Because
like you were saying, you know, how do I take on Hollywood?
Yes.
How do I take on this corporation?
That's right.
Well, we can only do it with the Lord's help.
Only.
And the Lord calls upon us to be faithful.
He does.
To that.
He does.
Regardless of the consequences.
That's right. That's right. The consequences are not up to us. God hasn't called us to make the change. He is the transformer. He's the one. We have a sign out in front of AFA and AFR today that says the Don Wildman Center for Cultural Transformation. Well, we're not transforming anyone.
Uh-huh.
But if we're faithful to present the gospel and present God's truth for all of life, then the Holy Spirit gets involved in that. And yes, people find freedom from sin. They find forgiveness of their sins, a home in heaven, and they find a way to live life that is obedient to God and pleasing to God. And that's transfer. I tell you, there's no greater power and transformation power in the world today.
Yes.
And that's our calling and that's our task. And if, but we can't transform them, but we can be faithful to share, present, proclaim, just like we're doing here on AFR, God's truth, God's message. And that's what Don started. He and Miss Linda, thanks be to God. I was reading a quote the other day by Leonard Ravenhill, who's talking about prayer, and he talked about, you know, as we pray to God, we bring our needs and our concerns to the Lord. And he went on to talk about how, but sometimes, and our burdens are lifted, but sometimes when we're praying, Fred, God will give us a burden.
Mm.
And that's what happened with Brother Don. I remember him saying on a number of occasions, buddy, I wonder why God wouldn't just let me be an ordinary preacher. You know, it was kind of funny to hear him talk about that. But he was like, you know, here I was, you know, I had a church and I thought things were going pretty well. And but that wasn't my calling.
Yeah.
But God had something else. So he had a burden. To be a faithful follower and a culture warrior, and certainly he did that. He did it well, and that's what the movie is all about. Presents not only how Don did that well, but it also presents the story of AFA and the story of, I think, every believer, that we're called to be faithful witnesses, and the only way we're going to do that, we're going to be in a spiritual warfare with this culture in which we're living.
Yeah.
And we're like you say, we're called to be salt and light in this culture. We're not to blend in. And so we shouldn't be surprised when we're standing for Christ that we have those that oppose us and even hate us.
All right. Well, the film is Culture Warrior. As I say, you can go and watch it for free, culturewarrior.movie. culturewarrior.movie, or you can get the disc for yourself.
That's right.
Buddy, thank you so much.
Thanks,
for joining me. Culture Warrior, it's not just the Don Wildman story, folks.
No.
It's also about a challenge for each of us.
Yes.
To be a culture warrior. Take the time, watch this movie. It'll be a challenge for you and your family. All right. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Fred.
Appreciate it very much. All right. Much more ahead on this Wednesday edition of At the Core. We'll be right back.
The The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training or cultural transformation. AFA believes that all men and women, whether in private or public, should be free to exercise their faith without hindrance from the government.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Discover the story of the culture warrior, Don Wildman, and how he went head-to-head with Hollywood, Playboy, the homosexual agenda, and the Disney empire. The movement Don started paved the way for Christians to boldly stand for truth and righteousness in a hostile culture. Watch Culture Warrior today for free. Visit culturewarrior.movie.
Hey, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International. You know, it was 110 degrees in Ethiopia, Africa. Hundreds had gathered for Sunday worship outdoors, and I learned that some had walked an hour or more just to be there. Afterwards, I met Cademan, hunched over a table and frantically copying scriptures from an Amharic language Bible to a lined piece of paper. Then his face turned sad as he closed the Bible and handed it back to its rightful owner. Only a few in that church to have a Bible. You see, Cademan loves the Lord, leads his family, is faithful at worship, but he's never read a single verse in his own Bible because he does not own one. While we in America can open our Bibles every day, 9 of 10 Christians in parts of Africa are denied God's Word. And that's why Bible League is focused right now on Africa, the place in the world where Christianity is growing in the greatest numbers. A Bible can be sent for $5. $50 will send 10. Learn how you can be a blessing by calling 800-YES-WORD. 800-YES-WORD or by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org.
This is the Lost in Translation Ministry Minute. Here now is your host, Dr. Baruch Korman.
We find that spiritual adultery is idolatry. Marriage is a covenant, and both parties need to be faithful to that marriage covenant, the agreements, the fidelity, what an important word, and what a abused subject today in so many different ways in the media. And we should be faithful and demonstrate fidelity spiritually to our God, putting Him first and having no other gods, as we learn right off the bat in the Ten Commandments, only Him.
Learn more about the teaching ministry of Dr. Baruch Korman at loveisrael.org. You'll find videos on almost any biblical topic on his YouTube page and on the My Bible Study app. That's loveisrael.org.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
And welcome back. Fred Jackson sitting in for Walker today. And joining me in studio right now, my colleague from American Family News, Chris Woodward.
Good afternoon.
As you often drop in on this program.
I live here.
You live here.
I sleep at my house and I live here.
Okay.
Happy to be here, though. Yes. Yeah. Whatever you need me to do, I'll restrap the parking lot later.
All right.
Make popcorn.
All right.
Pick up Bobby's dry cleaning.
Okay. Anyway, you watched Speech last night.
I did.
Yeah. And you came up with how many clips was it?
I brought in 43 sound bites this morning, and we're now up to about 50.
Okay.
And we're now going to play every one of them.
We like to play those.
Yes.
Now.
Fire away.
And Bobby says, I'm leaving right
Friday.
Now. Hey, listen, one of the interesting aspects coming out of the speech last night by President Trump, and we ought not to be shocked by this, the mainstream media, the MSNBCs, CNN, you name it, they just couldn't find anything good to say. And I'd like to play a little bit of that right now, cut number 14.
This is disgusting. The president made a spectacle out of praising a young man who thus far survived pediatric cancer, as if the president had something to do with that.
I hope he has a long life as a law enforcement officer, but I hope he never has to defend the United States Capitol against Donald Trump supporters. And if he does, I hope he isn't one of the six who loses his life to suicide.
Did you hear, I guess it was Rachel Maddow said.
At the beginning. Yeah.
The president made a spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
No, he was simply pointing out, he was pointing to this young man. We talked about this a little bit earlier on the show. DJ Daniel has overcome. He was given a cancer diagnosis, 5 months to live, and it's now 5 years later. And DJ is alive, and he's surviving, and he's thriving. And he's made an honorary police officer, and last night he became an honorary member of the Secret Service. That's what President Trump was pointing out.
Nowhere in the remarks, for those that didn't watch it, nowhere in the remarks did Trump mention how he was the person credited for saving this child's life. Nothing of that sort, which is why, with all due respect to Rachel Maddow, you don't need to watch MSNBC, because clearly she was trying to make something into a story when that's not what the story was.
No, we were talking earlier. I mean, the Democrats couldn't even celebrate that. And for Rachel Maddow, MSNBC, to point that out as a problem with the Trump speech last night speaks of a character problem, I'll put it mildly.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what Secretary of State Marco Rubio said over the weekend when people were constantly asking him, other television networks were asking him about the exchange with Zelensky and President Trump and how people were just criticizing Trump left and right. And Rubio basically said, you know, the only reason people are criticizing it is because it's Donald Trump. They are so opposed to Donald Trump that anything he says, does, will ever do is going to be bad, and I'm going to tell you about it.
So here's what's so puzzling. Political parties exist to win elections and get in power. Here's what I don't understand. The Democrats lost in November. They know why they lost. Because of their disastrous policies, Joe Biden's disastrous policies on the border. The violence, the subsequent violence of illegal aliens in this country. They know all this. The ongoing war in Ukraine, which Joe Biden just threw money at. What's going on in Gaza? And we see the anti-Semitism demonstrations in this country. So those are just some of the reasons why the Democrats lost. Plus, they had terrible candidates. But also, the main, like political parties, they exist to win elections and to be in power. What I don't understand is why MSNBC and CNN to this day insist on not letting go their left-wing bias. We're seeing it not only at those networks, we're seeing it, you know, Washington Post, the LA Times. We have new owners there that are trying to change things. But these newspapers, these networks are laying people off. ABC, I saw this, ABC News is laying off 200 people. And it's because they're losing audiences, because the audiences are just fed up with their left-wing bias. So I don't understand, you know, companies exist to make money. To make money, if you're a network, you have to have audiences so that your advertisers will pay money to your network. It's almost like they're insistent on driving themselves into the ground.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you run a business with your ideology versus common sense. If they were trying to run a business and reach people, or at least expand customers to save your product, in this case, newspapers, which unfortunately are dying, despite the great work that does go on behind the scenes in many newspapers. Same thing with like MSNBC or CNN. They're losing money. The ratings are down. You got more people watching HDTV8 and ESPN The Ocho than you have watching MSNBC. So you would think they would do something to expand or reach out to new customer bases to try to right the ship. But they're so driven by, I can't stand Donald Trump, and I don't like anything with an R next to his or her name, that they are firmly planted there, which is why you're seeing their products die.
Fox contributor Joe Concha kind of got into this this morning, I think, was being interviewed, that he says the Democrats are in disarray with, they have no message that is appealing to the American people. Cut number 12.
And the big takeaway, besides how comfortable and incompetent President Trump looked, was the Democrat reaction during the address on the other side of the aisle and by the media, like on MSNBC afterwards. I mean, we saw Democrats in that chamber holding up what looked like bingo card signs, interrupting, heckling, even walking out. Who is advising this party? Is it, are they taking their own cues from Rachel Maddow and Nicole Wallace over at MSNBC? Because it's not a good idea. If this is the plan, it's a hot mess in a dumpster fire, and it shows why the Democratic Party right now is polling lower than it ever has in its history. No message, no solutions, just complaining, whining, and even, as you mentioned, criticizing Trump for honoring a 13-year-old cancer victim. That's, I don't know. It shows once again that rock bottom does have a basement.
So what Koch is saying basically is that, you know, the Democratic Party, the mainstream media, they're in kamikaze mode. Mm-hmm. They really are. And, you know, some people sitting back are saying, pull up, pull up. And they're not. They're bound and determined to put that nose right into the ground.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of like James Carville. He has been on television a lot in the last few months, generally wearing his favorite team's shirt and cap, saying, we have to quit this stuff. You got to listen to me in a more Cajun accent than what I just tried to do. Bill Maher, same thing. Bill Maher is an old school Democrat who's trying to speak some common sense into these people's minds. But the problem is you have people like AOC, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, Jasmine Crockett making a dance video with a couple of her friends outside the office that her constituents voted her into when they're hurting and needing help and back home in the district. She's making a video. And then there was something last night where a lot of Dems put on this little sad face and they posted it on X to say, we just left the State of the Union and we can't believe this is what we heard. That kind of stuff. It's they were clearly trying to get attention. And we knew that from the get-go. We knew they were going to heckle it when Trump enters the chamber, and then you have one representative standing there holding a sign that says, this is not normal. Well, it's abnormal what you're doing. It's impolite. It's not respectful to the office of the president. Like, it doesn't matter who's there in the Oval Office. That's the president of the United States. We all should show respect for that individual. And they clearly were not remotely interested in doing that.
Well, couple of aspects from the speech last night. One of the things that was really encouraging was what President Trump had to say about military recruitment and what has happened there. We know one of the big stories over the last 4 years is military recruitment has been hurting. Of course, not helped at all by the fact that the Biden administration drove out 8,000 military people because they refused to take the poison shot. They refused to do that, not to mention the fact that standards were lowered so that people just didn't want to be there, the woke policies, all of that sort of thing. But in the first, 6 weeks that Donald Trump has been president, mm-hmm. he's been able to start to turn that around, and it's exciting to hear what the message is on recruitment levels. Cut number 18.
I am pleased to report that in January, the U.S. Army had its single best recruiting month in 15 years, and that all armed services are having among the best recruiting results ever in the history of our services. What a difference. And you know, it was just a few months ago where the results were exactly the opposite. We couldn't recruit anywhere. We couldn't recruit. Now we're having the best results just about that we've ever had. What a tremendous turnaround.
Tremendous turnaround. The president is exactly right. And Chris, it almost goes without saying we have to have a strong military in the world that we're living in right now.
Yeah. And, that, you know, Trump is trying to get out of wars. He's trying to cause wars to end. But we still need a strong military because you have, in his mind, peace through strength. Other presidents have lived by that motto. He's trying to follow their example, their good example. And imagine what these numbers would be today if Vice President Kamala Harris or somebody else had been elected. We'd probably have a story from Chad Groening featuring Bob McGinnis or somebody saying this is terrible, where our military is dying, and this is making all of our adversaries laugh at us. But they're not, because they know this is just 1 month. It's going to continue to go up.
You mentioned Kamala Harris. Tim Walz, her running mate?
Yes.
Do you know what he said the other day?
Coach Tim Walz. He said a lot. You'll have to.
He said, "I'm thinking about running for president in 2028." And I just, what? Do you
understand? Please do.
Yeah.
Please do. That would be great news for the Republican Party. It's just they live in a bubble.
They do. They do. He clearly is one of the reasons why she was not the victor.
No kidding.
You know, a lot of people in Pennsylvania and beyond said she made a tremendous mistake when she didn't pick Josh Shapiro and went with him. And it was head-scratching that she would pick Tim Walz when she needed Pennsylvania. He was a relatively popular new governor there. Former congressman, was the attorney general. So he has a resume. He could very well have served in that capacity. But for some reason, she went with a guy who has a sketchy past from a state she was going to win, and he pushed a whole bunch of woke stuff that was not going to win over people in Kansas and Alabama and other states that she needed, Georgia. I mean, I could be wrong. There's a long time between now and 2028, but there are many other people that will soundly defeat him in a primary if he were to run again.
Well, it probably won't be some Democratic mayors. There's three or four of them that are in Washington today.
Kumbaya meeting, I believe.
Yes.
And they're there to answer questions from Republicans about they're not cooperating with ICE to get rid of violent illegal immigrants that are in their cities. In fact, these mayors, like Mayor Wu of Boston, and is it Johnson in Chicago?
Brandon Johnson.
And the mayor of Denver and mayor of New York, which is, by the way, Mayor Adams is trying to do something about this.
Now, yes.
Yes, now he is. But the other three are defending, basically letting these criminals exist in their community.
Yeah, and I think part of that is because there's a unfortunate thing that some politicians live by. It's not a big deal to me because it's somebody else's money. And until people really, you know, they've got money from their citizens that they could continue to borrow from and house these people. What was interesting is Nancy Mace, at one point during a Q&A with these mayors, she went down the list of all the witnesses and asked each mayor, are these people here illegally and is that wrong? Something of that sort. And when it came time to the Chicago mayor's time to answer her question, he hem-hawed and she said yes or no. And then he hem-haws again and she says, you can find this video on YouTube or wherever, she said, this is why you have a low approval rating, because you stink at answering questions. On live television.
It's true.
Yes.
It's absolutely true. And again, I mean, these mayors are facing opposition. The Boston mayor facing Chicago mayor is facing huge opposition from what should be a dependable community there.
Yes.
The African-American community.
They have been livid.
They are livid with them because he's spending all kinds of taxpayers' money to house and feed these illegal immigrants. At the same time, he's shutting down public schools in their neighborhood.
Yes, there have been a number of things on WGN and other news outlets for over a year now where minorities go to a town hall meeting, which everybody is welcome to do, and they raise concern because the city is cutting services they're working and paying taxes for to feed and house and pamper people that came here illegally and are still living here illegally.
Well, we'll see. You know, we're a year and a half or so away from the midterms. We'll see where America is with all of this. But it is hard to imagine that unless Democrats change their tune, get their priorities in sync with the American people, how things are going to get better for them. All right. Great to be with you today. We got to run. Much more great programming here at American Family Radio. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you,
Bobby. Thank you to Buddy Smith. Good to be with you today. We'll see you again soon.
You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you. We need to save them. That is why we have partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears the heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.